this young man. He knew it would be hard. He says twice after the young man left, why did he go away? Well, he went away because he didn't want to follow Jesus. How do you know? Jesus told him to go away, didn't he? He said, you want that life that you've been missing? He says, go away, sell everything you have, give it to the poor, and then come follow me. So he wasn't supposed to come follow Jesus right that minute. So that tells me he could have gone away, could have sold everything. Yeah, but he was sad. Let me tell you something. Anybody who tells me that they've sacrificed for the Christian life and that they were never sad, they're liars. I think that's why he makes it hard. Here's the deal. Follow my line of thinking if you can. I'm not mad at anybody. I've found this in my own life. Whenever I give up stuff for Jesus that's not really important to me, I feel good about myself. Or when I give up stuff for Jesus because I expect him to bless me in return. By the way, that's not a gift. That's a bribe. If I'm only giving something to God so he'll give something back to me, that's not a gift at all. It's insulting, actually, to call it a gift. Just call it what it is. So here, God, I'll give you this $10 because I know you'll give me $1,000 back. Grin and wink. But don't call it a gift of love. Sometimes the greatest gifts of love are the ones that are hard. When you do something that really you'd rather not do, but love compels you to do it. So I think that's all wrapped up in why the young man went away sad. In fact, in the Bob version of this movie, where I'm the director and I wrote the score and everything, and I've picked the actors. By the way, the rich young ruler is the same guy that played Jesus in Mel Gibson's movie in the Bob version of this. So as he's walking away, sad, it's running through his mind, oh, I'm going to have to call my broker. I have to call the realtor. I'm going to have to sell the Mercedes. I wonder if he'd let me keep one of my cars. He's just thinking, what a nightmare this is going to be. And, of course, my theory is he did it. And he came back to Jesus and found that there was not false advertising. He found exactly the life that he'd missed. The other reason I think that you have to torch some stuff to follow is simple word. Number one, you mentioned it this morning, Rick. Number one ploy of the enemy is distraction. Number one, hands down. Good things, bad things, surprises, good surprises, bad surprises, lack of a job, singlehood, marriage, no kids, kids. I mean, anything that can be used as distraction, the enemy wants to do, to take my energy and my attention off of the thing that's the most important. If you're a ruler and you're young and you're rich and you have control, dumping all that stuff, it may be the only way that you could actually be a follower. It's too much other stuff to do. You know, we talked about it a little bit last week. Pick up the CD. I don't want to redo our whole entire study. This word hard, I told you I was going to tell you what it means, and I did not even write the Greek word down. Do you have it there, Fred? Douskolos. Walking Greek encyclopedia. Thank you, Lord. But here's what it means. I'm the kind of a guy, when I look up a meaning of a word, I'll look up all of the legitimate synonyms just to walk all the way around it until I find a grab handle. Here is the best synonym I could find for this word hard. Now, you'd think difficult, but it's a stronger word than that. Douskolos. Say that five times. See if I can work that into a conversation today. Difficult, you'd think, would be a really good synonym is just not strong enough. Impracticable. Impracticable. Not impracticable, but impracticable. Looked it up. I didn't even know what it meant, so I had to look it up. Here's what it means. It means something which is incapable of being put into practice with all of the available means. Now that sounds suspiciously like something Jesus said a few sentences later when he says, with man, it's impossible, but with God, all things are possible. I think that twice that he says this, it's hard, it's impracticable for a rich man or someone that's holding on to riches to enter the kingdom. I've always viewed that ever since I started thinking this way as a prayer request. Looking at the disciples and say, this guy is going to have a lot on his plate over the next couple of days or weeks. Because he's not going to be able to do this without help. Well, then why ask him to do it? Because it was the right thing to do. Here's something else I want to add. I just thought about this morning. I got up exceptionally early because my watch died. Thank God for that. And I'm sitting there with my coffee and I'm thinking, okay, I've studied my brains out on this. Now, Lord, if there's anything I'm missing, I could hardly write stuff down fast enough. The stuff that kept bringing to my mind. Last week, if you remember, the disciple, when I talked about the fact that we don't have any record of Jesus asking anybody else to do this, sell everything, give it to the poor, and then come follow. But all of the disciples left. The fishermen left their nets. Matthew left his tax collecting business. They dropped everything. And they followed, but they did it voluntarily. Jesus didn't ask them to. I was thinking about that this morning. But try to track with me here, because I think we're onto something here. They didn't sell their nets and sell their boats. Matthew didn't sell his business and give the money away. They still had a safety net, if you pardon the pun. What was the very first thing the disciples did after Jesus died, aside from hiding? They went back to their nets. Now what are we going to do? Well, we still got the old business. See, so when Peter says, well, we left everything, yeah, buddy, but you didn't sell it. Give this guy a break. He's not going to have any safety net, and he had the world's biggest safety net. He's being asked to torch everything and have no plan B ever in the future. Just come and trust everything to Jesus. And I'll tell you, I've been on the verge of that and very close to that in my life, and that's not easy. And it wasn't supposed to be easy. It was worth it. And Jesus is where the life comes from. Isn't it interesting to just look at the two groups? The one group, Peter's saying, well, we left everything. Yeah, but you can go back to it anytime you want to. I have friends who've dropped everything, and I'm not the only person that ever moved to Maine just because God told them to. My friend Brian had a really lucrative contractor business in California, where being a contractor is actually a good job, where you make lots of money. And when he brought his family out here to obey the Lord and they started the fellowship down in Portland, he still had almost $200,000 in the bank, which I can't wrap my brain around that. But so what ultimately wound up happening over the course of the next couple of years, they found some land, they built a house, they helped them build their house, and through one thing or another, all of a sudden they had zero money left in the bank. And God says, okay, here we go. And I remember something Brian said. I was meeting together with him for prayer one morning, And he looked at me and he had tears in his eyes and he says, "Now, Bob, I couldn't leave even if I wanted to." And I said, "But that's a good thing, isn't it? Because if you still had $200,000 in the bank, you'd pack up and leave and start over again someplace else, right?" And he said, "Oh, yeah." So is it a bad thing that God just drained all your resources? Is it a bad thing that he torched your escape pod? Is it a bad thing that he asked this young man to remove all his safety nets? Not if you believe that Jesus is going to be everything you need. He doesn't ask everybody to do that. He did ask all of his followers to follow. Come be with me. Model your life after me. You have probably found by now, as I have, that's hard to do the more stuff you have. It is. It's just hard to do. I could not do what God's asking me to do now with the same life that I had even a few years ago. I just couldn't. There were too many demands on my time and my emotions. And so I think Jesus, knowing it was going to be hard, called this guy to do what was going to be the hardest thing. And once again, it's not the go, it's not the sell, it's not the give where the life is. It's the come follow. Come be with me. Oh, by the way, all that stuff you dumped, it's being held for you. It's in an offshore bank. Way offshore. We looked at this, and of course, that's the upshot of what Jesus says here when he talked about nobody left anything for me and got permanently ripped off. Because you're going to find that I'll give you back even here, much less what you have waiting for you in that offshore account. Wednesday night, we looked at that wonderful scripture about our inheritance being kept by God and the fact that we ourselves are being kept by God as well. That wonderful phrase in 1 Peter chapter 1 where it says that our inheritance, the life waiting for us, if you will, that says it is beyond the reach of change. It's beyond the reach of decay. Unfading in its quality, its beauty, its intensity. Everything in this world, all of the beauty, every wonderful experience, all of our treasure, it all fades. It's all subject to decay. If there's anything about this life that we all know is that everything changes. So if God calls me to leave behind stuff that's gonna fade, gonna change, is rotting as we speak, just like my body is rotting as we speak. If he's asking me to make any kind of a sacrifice for the sake of eternal things, which can never fade or change or lose their intensity or lose their beauty, that's not a bad deal, is it? Especially if he ends up inviting me to come be with him. I wrote three things down of what would make it hard for a person trusting in the riches to enter the kingdom or to come follow. Three things I just wrote down, and I'm sure it's not all of it, but it's just three things that occurred to me this morning. Number one is false security. I was thinking of Hosni Mubarak, richer than Bill Gates, which is hard to imagine. Well, not anymore, he's not. What's going to happen to all of that stuff that you thought was going to keep you, protect you? False security. I have noticed that if I have a visible false security versus an invisible true security, I will trust the visible one. It's wrong, but it's the way we are. So why would Jesus asked this guy to get rid of the visible stuff, you know, the practical stuff. Well, because it was false security. It was going to fade. It could be stolen. It was going to distract. That's the second thing I wrote down. It's distraction. And the third thing I wrote down, and I think it especially applies to young, rich rulers. That tends toward self-centeredness. The call to be with Jesus is a call towards others-centeredness, isn't it? No matter what anybody says, oh God, if you make me rich. We used to have a guy in our fellowship that used to ask me, Pastor Bob, would you pray that I win the lottery? And I said, well, Blaney, I'll pray that if you buy me a Harley Davidson when you win. And I wrote down the color and the model and everything that I wanted. And it is just easy when we have the power and the means to fulfill our wishes. We do. It's one thing to say, oh, God bless me with a lot of money and of course I'll give it all away. Yeah, right. I told you the story a couple of weeks ago about the man who was invited to a fundraising thing for a building program at a church, and he was a very well-known, successful businessman. And he told the story about how when he was a teenager, a minister, a missionary came to their church to speak and talked about the needs on the mission field, and this man said, you know, I was so moved by that that I took I emptied my savings account. It was only $5, but I gave everything that I had. And he said, and God blessed that, and that's why I am the man that I am today, because I gave it all. And a little old lady in the back says, I dare you to do it again. Easy to say when you only got $5. It's another thing to say when you got more. The disciples were kind of astonished at Jesus' whole thing of even implying that it would be difficult for a rich man to enter the kingdom. They viewed rich people as being first in line for everything. In fact, the common rabbinical teaching was very similar to some parts of the Christian world today, that if you have a lot, that's a sign that God really loves you. They don't talk as much about that fact that if you're poor, that would mean God doesn't love you as much. And the fact is, God does bless some people, and with financially, and other people, he blesses them by not giving them a lot of stuff. So they were kind of stymied by this whole thing. Well, man, if people with all this privilege and that have obvious signs of God's blessing in their life, if it's going to be hard for them to get into the kingdom, who can even be saved? Can't you see that aha light coming on? Can't you see? I always see Jesus raising his finger and saying, yeah, now you're getting somewhere. Because salvation is a miracle. If the rich are on the same, if the rulers, the powerful, the law keepers, if they're on the same footing as the lowest guttered out buck private sinner, and it's impossible to get in, then you got one shot at it, and that's it's possible with God. We come on level footing. And Jesus didn't he say that's the prerequisite of getting in, is to be poor in spirit, to see that you're bankrupt. So Peter asked his childish question. And I did get ahead of my notes when I said that whole thing about, well, Lord, we left everything. Yeah, but they didn't sell everything. They didn't get rid of it. It was still there. They could go back. And what he was asking this rich young ruler to do was pretty heavy. As I was listening to the tape of the last time I taught this, I was reminded of when I moved out here and God didn't really tell me exactly why. I was out here for 3 years before I knew why he moved me. Didn't even really seem to make sense to me. had to leave behind something I was doing that was quite successful. I left behind the only place that had ever felt like home to me, my family, and like I said, my friends, and which after 3 months of wrestling, I finally did, and I mean, I was willing to do it, just not as willing as maybe I should have been. It was costly, and I counted the cost before I did it. But when I was sitting there 8.5 years ago, looking over at my beautiful wife-to-be and looking at this entire room clear full, people standing up, people I would have never known, some of them, most of them I would have never known if I'd stayed where I was. And here was my family, and they were all there. Then all of a sudden, the thing that Jesus said seemed like such a lavish, fulfilled promise. Because I left everything behind, and it was hard for a long time. And now here, all of a sudden, here was all the stuff he gave back. I still believe that's true. Even though now I have the incredible shrinking church, and I'd never see my family, and my wife left, right? I don't have all those visible things. It's still the same God. The promise is still the same promise. What is it that, is it going to cost me to follow? Well, Jesus makes it really clear, yeah, it might. It's still worth it because he's where the life is. I do find this statement interesting that you'll receive in return in this present life as well as the inheritance you get in life later. Homes and brothers and sisters and mothers and children. I think one of the most common things that I've heard people say as a pastor are that the people who are their Christian family are closer to them than their biological family. Once in a while you find a few people that it's both. But for most people that don't have other Christians in their family, they said, I've never known what it, real brothers and sisters, a real mom and dad were until I came into God's family. And it's amazing, the contrast. And I think that's some of what Jesus is saying to these guys. Yeah, it may cost you leaving stuff behind that's dear. God knows that. You won't be uncompensated, even in this life. I do like that he threw in the with persecutions thing, lest we get blown out of the water the first time somebody cusses at us for singing songs about Jesus. I love that testimony this morning. Wasn't that great? Oh, I'm so proud of Annie. Mom, can I go back out and sing for 5 more minutes? Let him yell at me some more. So Jesus ends this passage by saying, many who are first will be last and the last first. Once again, that's Peter and the disciples who still hadn't got it out of their head right up until the cross, to the same day of the cross. Jesus was having to repeat those words to them. God's kingdom functions differently. If you're going to try to be important, you are missing the point. It's not the way God runs his kingdom. It's the way the world runs its kingdom. Now, here's an interesting thing. Flip over to Matthew 20. We'll spend the rest of our time this morning looking at this parable. Matthew is the only one that includes this. That's why I want to do it today, because it's sandwiched between two repetitions of that same statement. Last will be first. It's not going to look exactly like you think it's going to look. You guys think you're in the head of the line, and there might be people that get in and are blessed that you don't think deserve it. You might think you do. You might think they don't. And then at the very end of the parable, he repeats the same thing. So let's read it. I'm going to read actually the repetition of this statement in Matthew 19:30. Says, many who are first will be last. Many who are last will be first. And verse 1 of Matthew 20 says, because the kingdom of heaven is like First time I read this, I said, the kingdom of God is like a Land Rover. And then I thought, sorry, wipe those glasses, Bob. You got Land Rovers on your brain. Like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire men to work in his vineyard. Underline this statement. The guys he goes out and he hires in the morning, he agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. About the third hour, which is 9 a.m., he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. So he told them, you also go and work in my vineyard, note these words, and I will pay you whatever's right. So they went. He went out again about the sixth hour, which is noon, and the ninth hour, which is 3 p.m., and he did the same thing. About the 11th hour, 5 p.m. or thereabouts, he went out and found still others standing around, and he said, why have you been standing here all day doing nothing? Because no one's hired us, he answered. And he said to them, you also go and work in my vineyard. And when evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, watch carefully, call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first. That's sort of backwards, isn't it? And the workers who were hired about the 11th hour came, and each received a denarius. Now remember, the contract that they signed was, I'll just pay you whatever's right. So he gives them a denarius. And so when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. Now, the guys that were hired first were hired for a denarius. They were the only ones that were. Everybody else hired throughout the day just said, I'll pay whatever's right. So why did they expect more? That's one of the main points of our study today. But each one of them also received a denarius. And when they received it, they began to grumble against the Land Rover, against the landowner. I'm going to read this in a whiny, grumbly voice. Okay. These men who were hired last worked only 1 hour, and because I counted, and you've made them equal to us who have borne the heat of the day, the burden of the work. But he answered one of them, friend, I'm not being unfair to you, or I'm not being unfair to you. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Well, technically, I guess we did. Take your pay and go. I want to give the man who was hired last the same as I gave you. I want to. In a word, that's the definition of grace. Where God does something simply because he wants to. He didn't earn it. He just wants to. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I'm generous?